This time, we're chatting with another heavyweight in the online space. For the past decade, Travis Ketchum has been the CEO of Campaign Refinery and Contest Domination, helping tens of thousands of businesses build bigger email lists filled with qualified leads. If your focus is email marketing and list building, then you're going to love what we have for you today. Travis, welcome. It's a pleasure to chat with you.
Oh, wonderful being here. Thanks for having me on.
Well, I'd like to start by asking a little bit more about you and your background.
Sure. Where should we start? How far back do you want to go?
Let's go back to the cradle. No. Let's go back to when you first decided that you wanted to have a business in the online space.
Sure. So I've always been interested in entrepreneurship in general, right? Like, I go a little bit further back, the car washing and lawn mowing and paper routes. Like, I was always hustling to make something happen, right? And I always had this dream of having my own thing. So that's always kind of been in the periphery, right? And technically, my first like legitimate business, once you're you have to be 18 to have that, be here in the United States, was actually started in high school. And I remember like having to get past the school filter and do all these things and apply for a business license. And it was actually a dropshipping business on eBay, and there's dropshipping laptops all over the place and building high-end gaming machines. Like, so that was where I sort of got my taste of money, the value of your own business and the leveraged ability of a business to generate revenue. And in fact, in just a couple months, I went from basically a broke 18-year-old to being able to pay for at least the first full year of college, room and board, the whole deal. So that was a really eye-opening experience. Once I got through school, got the normal job, hated it, quit right after 9 months, and went and worked for a best-selling author and speaker, filling her events, live in-person events, filling her affiliate program, all that kind of stuff. But I realized I'd been building a list and building assets for someone who wasn't me, right? And so I had basically replaced one job for another. And that's when I thought, okay, I need to build my own list as fast as possible. What's the best way to do that? And a contest is what came to mind, but I didn't like any of the contest solutions that were out there. And so I, dabbled around and tried to find, some developers and had some, false starts and errors and wrong alleyways and all that kind of stuff. But eventually I did get this little WordPress plugin idea that worked, and it followed my very simple, minimal viable product vision of what it should look like. And I had been kind of blogging on the side for years, and it only collected a couple hundred leads over about 4 years. And then I ran this contest and I generated 2,000 leads in a week. And that to me was the aha moment that A, this works, and B, software is kind of fun. And so that's what sort of kicked things off and got me down the path of being really, I guess, a software entrepreneur.
Are you a coder yourself, Travis?
No, I know just enough to be dangerous to go break things, but not enough to actually build it myself. So, when I was at school, I actually, even though I went to school for marketing and a minor in international business, but I've always been technically minded, right? Because I was building computers and kind of nerdy in that regard. When I was at school, I actually sort of self-trained myself to build enterprise IT. So by the time I started as, basic help desk, like, hey, my Outlook doesn't work, to by the time I left, I built, it was like a $14 million server system for the school. So, I sort of worked my way up that way. So I have some technical chops, and I know enough about database structures and that kind of stuff to at least sort of know what to ask for from a developer, but not enough to go build it myself, right? But I can investigate technologies and weigh their pros and cons and say, hey, I think these are what we should maybe be weighing, but not be deep enough into the code to know, hey, we need to pick this technology and go this route. I leave that up to the people I hire because they're experts in that space, but I can weigh in and say, let's investigate these pathways and see if that makes sense. But I don't actually do the development myself.
Got you. So that's outsourced. Is it you found some coders that can take your vision, if you like, and bring it to life?
In the early days, that was the case. Yeah, I mean, now I hire people full time, but in the early days, it was actually a pretty big risk because when I was creating that first version, that client, that best-selling author and speaker I was working for, we basically had a difference of opinion, and they told me to take a hike, and I was like, well, I just signed an 18-month lease with my then girlfriend, now wife. And it was like literally the next day she wanted to part ways. I was like, oh no, I just signed the longest lease of my life for more money than I've ever paid for a place to live. And I have no income now. Like, great. And so I actually financed that first version on a credit card. I had no idea if it was going to work. I figured if it really went, to heck in a handbasket, I could go down to the Apple Store and start slinging iPhones to people or something. Yeah, I could figure out how to make it work. But Yeah, just hire people, outsource in the beginning, and eventually hire them full time now.
That's an amazing story. So your back is literally against the wall, and you've got to make this a success. What were the steps that you took to kind of give yourself the best chance of success?
Well, being under pressure is definitely a good way to do it, right? Having a a big rental check to stroke. I still had a car payment at the time. I had student loans, the whole deal, right? So pressure makes diamonds sometimes, right? And then basically what I did is I tried to really trim down the scope. So I think a lot of people, when they get to software, and this still happens to me sometimes still, I have to rein myself back in, but you get what's called feature creep, right? So it's like the first thing is deciding what does it really absolutely have to have, like it won't work without it. What does that feature list look like? And everything else is version 2 or version 1.1, right? At least. So like for me, that literally meant like I didn't even have a members area in the beginning. Like my delivery was an AWeber autoresponder with a link to an Amazon S3 file that was unprotected on the first version, right? And then I knew I needed an upsell, but I didn't know how to do that. And so instead of saying, oh, let's make a bunch of crazy features, I said, well, I could sell a different license to the product. And I knew just enough to go in and literally rename the file to a different zip and like rename it. So when you installed it, it said business license, but it was actually the same software. And I wasn't trying to like scam people, but it's like this one has our blessing to use with clients. And this one is for individual use. But it, you know, simplify, simplify, simplify. And once you can really, really trim it down, I think you'll find that 90% of a software thing, you're like, well, that's a nice to have, but what do I have to have to make it work? And if you can really be disciplined in that, you can take what would otherwise cost tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars, and all of a sudden you're, you know, five figures instead of, you know, a lot more. So, you know, that was really the discipline I think that was required to get it going. And then it's getting traffic and sales, right? So I had a couple friends with some small email lists, but it's a lot easier to go to, you know, the medium-sized players than the big dogs and just get them to send it to, you know, a couple thousand people and see if it bites. And even those first few thousand people, you know, we sold, you know, like 100 copies or something, which wasn't insane, but it was enough to show that it had legs. And then at that point, I could take that little bit of data and go and get a big launch partner and actually do a proper launch. And that's where we sold tens of thousands of copies in a week.
Wow. So you were able to pay off that initial credit card that you loaded up to make it happen.
Yeah, for sure. Credit card, take a bite out of the car payments, a bite out of student loans, give myself some breathing room. And then at that point, I could say, okay, then I took the rest of the money and started investing in a SaaS version. Once I knew it had legs, I didn't want to just like, you know, that's one-time money for a WordPress plugin. So I didn't want to just say, great, cool, pay off some things and move on with my day. I wanted to build something proper. And so I went and found a more experienced developer who happened to actually be one of our first 10 customers that was excited about the idea. And he actually wanted to like use our name. I was like, no, here's my vision. Let's partner instead. And so he and I actually worked together to build the SaaS version that went on to do quite a few customers.
So the original version is Contest Domination. Is that right?
Yeah. Contest Domination is what they were both called, both versions of that software. But one was a very simple WordPress plugin. And one actually turned into a SaaS that we were able to kickstart and actually get recurring revenue and all that kind of stuff. So it could continue to fund itself. And then that became our launch pad to then have me build Campaign Refinery.
Got you. Now, you mentioned your girlfriend at the time. You've just signed this super long lease. But then you also mentioned that she's now your wife. So I guess that she was quite supportive throughout this process.
Yeah, I mean, she. If you ask her, she said she was maybe a little bit naive at the time. But, you know... She was even like, so we started dating when I was actually had the regular job, right? So before I even had gone and worked for the client. And I think we were on like month 2 or 3 or something of dating when I made the decision pretty unilaterally to quit my job and go down this path, basically be a contract worker. And I remember sitting down at dinner with her and her family and her dad, who's been, you know, a doctor his entire career, just like, you know, how's this going to affect your CV? And yeah, he has softened on how he remembers that event. But yeah, at the time, I'm thinking like he's probably like, "Who's this scrub trying to date my daughter? Doesn't even have a job, gave up his benefits, his, you know, retirement accounts, all that kind of stuff. What an idiot!" You know?
And how's that worked out for you, Travis? Since then, was that the best decision of your life? Would you say?
Yeah, it definitely was. The only reason you hear a little bit of hesitation there is because it's not for the faint of heart. There's been some significant challenges and some euphoric wins. But that's sort of the journey, I think, of an entrepreneur, and being willing to ride that up and down game is sort of the make or break attribute, I think, of entrepreneurs that can make it to the other side, because it's easy to get yourself in a pickle. But the challenge comes in having sort of the mental stamina and the support system, friends, family, colleagues, et cetera, to not only back yourself out, but to turn pickles into, you know, good pivots that end up being long-term wins for the business.
Now, for anybody that's not come across contest domination in one of its many guises, maybe you could just tell us a little bit about why contesting is so important.
Yeah, what made contest special and what made it so effective for me at the time is twofold. One is contests, just plain, if you don't even talk about the back end yet, just the front end conversion of a contest tends to be a lot higher than, say, get this free report, because you can make the prize a lot more attractive, even if there's only a chance they're going to get it. So it becomes more enticing and more of an incentive for someone to actually give up their information, and they're willing to give up more specific details. So usually if someone enters a contest, they might be willing to give you their zip code, maybe their phone number, so they can be contacted if they win. They may even give you some specific interest or pain point answers on the way in. So like an example that I like to give, you know, one of our clients over the years was promoting a gym, right? And on that entrance, it was like, you know, get access to a personal trainer. And then it would say, you know, what are you most interested in? Cardio, spin class, strength training, that kind of thing, which tees up your sales team perfectly, because now they just told you what their pain point is. Whereas if someone had just opted in for a workout at home PDF, you're more zoomed out on what their real needs are. The second component about contests that makes them special is the virality on the back end, and where you can incentivize them to then share that front end offer with their friends. And so that's where you get your viral lifts or your viral coefficient. So not only are you a much higher conversion rate on the front end, but then you get this additional lift on the back end. And sometimes you can actually generate more leads than you send in direct traffic. So if you sent 1,000 people to the page, you might actually end up with more than 1,000 leads because of all the sharing and stuff that they do with their friends on the back end. That's what makes contest this really special way to build a list.
How did you discover that as a concept?
Well, we had run some contests for that client that I was working for, but at the time I didn't like the way that the incentives were set up. You know, you have to remember, it's been a while since I did that first version, right? So that was back in, I actually launched it in 2012, started building at the end of 2011. And so back in 2011, most contest tools, you know, they had a high front-end conversion, but then on the back end for sharing, it was like you get 5 points if you share it on Twitter, 5 points if you share it on Facebook, 5 points if you email it to somebody, right? It was just like unilateral even incentive system, and it didn't have any correlation to how many new leads actually opted into the contest as a result of the share. And so the concept that I was going for at the time, which has now become, I'm not trying to beat my own drum here, but it has become the standard in contests, is that the sharing mechanism should have a direct correlation to actual referrals. And so our concept at the time was, you don't get any points just for sharing. You get 10 points when someone actually opts in. So it incentivizes them to share it on a real Twitter account instead of a throwaway Twitter account. It incentivizes them to actually maybe have a Facebook Messenger conversation with their brother or cousin about the cool contest, because you're trying to entice them to enter because it's going to help your chances to win. And so that flipping of its head went from, oh, you get a 5 or 10% bump on the back end, to sometimes tripling your overall leads. And that was the big sort of paradigm shift that I think needed to happen in contests. And if you look around at other contest tools, everyone else seems to agree.
Yeah, yeah. It has become, as you say, the standard in contesting. And this is useful for not only online marketing, is it? This process could be used by any business, pretty much in any different niche or whatever it is that you're offering.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that it does better in stuff that's B2C as opposed to B2B. It can work in B2B, but you're going to find that the sharing aspect of it is going to be significantly diminished. However, usually the lead value of B2B is so much greater that it doesn't matter. So yes, even if you got a 5% bump, right, more of a standard thing as opposed to the 50 or 300% bump, that 5%, you know, that might be worth 6 or 7 figures to your business, depending on who those people are.
And what have you found people are willing to put up as prizes for competitions in your experience?
I mean, the biggest mistake people make is trying to give away an iPad or a gift card or something, because it doesn't do anything to pre-qualify the user for what you actually do and sell. So you need to make sure it's correlated to your core business. So, like, you know, I said the example of the gym membership, right? If they gave away an iPad, that might actually be a couch potato that wants to watch Netflix, right? But by giving away time with a personal trainer, it's people who are looking for a transformational outcome. Those are a lot better prospects for a gym type scenario, right? So that makes a big difference. So you just got to think about what's the pain point, what's the mechanism that can get them to cross that bridge. That's what'll get them there.
For anybody that's interested in finding out more about contesting, which website should they go visit?
I mean, we certainly have contestdomination.com. We've got some free information there as well. But, you know, contests are great, but that's kind of only half the story, right? That's how you get the people on your list. But then what happens once you have them on your list?
That's right. And that's the next stage, isn't it, now with Campaign Refinery? So you've taken that initial list building process and then now refined it to make sure that the delivery of those messages get through to the right people as well. I mean, I'd love to touch on that as well. If anybody is interested in contesting, is it Contest Domination?
ContestDomination.com. And we even have a PDF. It's the contest funnel formula. If you Google contest funnel formula, you'll find the link to go grab that. But that's basically breaks down what a good contest funnel looks like, what the attributes are, how the mechanisms work, some good prize incentives, as well as some case studies to help give you some ideas about, you know, how that works, what good prizes look like, and actually snapshots from the dashboard of what their analytics look like once they're all done.
Excellent. So we've started building our list via contests. Now that we've got a list, what happens next, Travis?
Yeah, this has been like the biggest personal challenge, business challenge, but thing that I've like personally invested my heart and soul into is trying to fix email, because, you know, like I mentioned, I was really kind of a simpleton when it comes to email, right? In the early days, right? I did the normal sort of path most people, you know, they start with a MailChimp or an AWeber or a ConvertKit or something, right? And then I jumped over to Infusionsoft, thinking it was, you know, the World War II, you know, warship that was going to get me where I needed to be. And you know, in the early 2010s, they sort of had the market cornered in a lot of ways. And what I found was two things. One is that automation and tagging is amazing. Okay. The ability to flexibly manage your audience is great. But the challenge I ran into using tools like Infusionsoft, and then as you can imagine with Contest Domination, having tens of thousands of customers using all the different ESPs and logging into all the different ESPs and bug testing all the ESPs and figuring all that stuff out, there was a recurring issue that I was having, and it seemed like a lot of our customers were having as well, which was that as you grow your list, you become problem aware of deliverability. Because once you start getting a bigger list, clicking send does not equal hitting the inbox.